Today on Seculo, the Supreme Court officially takes the 2024 election case. What you need to know.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Tab, you know, after the broadcast of Friday, a simple order from the U.S. Supreme Court, which will have major ramifications for the next election and certainly potentially for who is on the primary ballot, the Republican primary, in states across the country. This will affect all 50 states. They have accepted a granted cert in Trump versus Anderson. And there's a lot to explain. This case is unique because there was, again, we represented these state parties. We were one of the first to file, actually. We were the first to file at the U.S. Supreme Court. And I think that to walk through people kind of how this procedurally is going to work, it's not happening like it's rapid speed. It's not like this is all going to be done in a week, but it is all going to be at least before the court by February 8th.
So here's what's happened. There are two cases. I'm holding in my hand our actual petition for certiorari. I don't know if we have this in the actual certiorari petition. This is what we filed with the Supreme Court. And then in addition, we filed the appendix to the petition, which is about an inch and a half thick. Trump's lawyer, that was for the Colorado Republican State Central Committee. Trump's lawyers filed the same thing for their case. This court granted that the Trump case, but had us listed as a party. What that means is we just got word on this morning. We will actually be filing an opening brief, what's called a brief on the merits. And that brief is going to be due in very short order here. So the time frame is really condensed. Our initial brief will be due on the 18th of January. Then we actually now, because the way the court has structured the case, since we're both parties, both Trump and the Colorado State Central Committee, the Colorado GOP, we then file our second brief in the case, which will be the final word on the case, on February 5th. That's the reply brief that we will file with the Supreme Court. The case will be argued on February 8th, likely that will be argued by one of President Trump's lawyers. So we will be filing briefs like everybody else does, all the other parties, which is just us and Trump and the electors that brought the lawsuit, and of course, crew representing them. And then there'll be a bunch of amicus briefs filed. But this is moving, like Jordan said, it's not at record speed in the sense of it's happening in a week, but it's very expedited, Andy. It's a condensed schedule.
It is. It is a schedule that is very expedited and recognizes the national importance of the issues that have been raised and the national havoc that could ensue depending upon the decision. And the justices, I think, wisely granted certiorari in the case. That is to say, review. Colorado Supreme Court, we're going to review your case. And we're going to do it in very rapid time, not exceptionally rapid, but nonetheless very rapid. I mean, when you get a case in which our brief is due, today is January the 8th, our brief is due in 10 days.
Yeah, so we already had a conference call this morning with our office in Washington. A bunch of us will go up there the 4 days before to get everything ready. And that is the merits brief. And that's the first major. When we say a brief on the merits, that means this is the arguments that we are making to the Supreme Court.
Right. I mean, that's due. I mean, when you're looking at the calendar right now for people who are listening to us live, that's 10 days, and then we'll have time to
reply.
And it's actually
9 days because you have to get it to the printer the day before.
Yeah. Okay, so 9 days, really. And then again, we get to a reply. That reply brief has to be in before 5 p.m. on Monday, February 5th. So our team, again, is obviously we've drafted a lot of these arguments. But because, Dad, we can talk about when we come back from the next break, this has broadened out past the arguments that we made, the three main, which we'll focus on, but to a much broader question that the Supreme Court has answered, which is basically, what are all the reasons why
this could be wrong? It's a very broad question. So the Supreme Court has granted review to hear the biggest election case in U.S. history. We're representing the Colorado GOP on the merits in the case, counsel of record for them. Our first Supreme Court due in just really 9 days, 10 days to get it in. Because of our ACLJ champions, we're able to do this and fight this historic case in 2024. We also got a Supreme Court brief due in the Idaho life case, and we've got a delegation from Israel coming over to the UK. We'll talk about that later in the broadcast. It's going to be a big year with many challenges, 2024. Become an ACLJ champion. That means you donate monthly. ACLJ.org/champion.
Welcome back to Secchio. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And again, we want to take your questions on this because I think when this came out Friday evening, and we were kind of sorting through, and we were sorting through too, kind of how does this all play out structurally? Now we figured out we filed both a merits brief and a responsive brief. A pretty quick timeline here. We're talking about 9 days and then a response brief by the 5th, oral arguments on the 8th. And then the questions presented, usually at the Supreme Court, you get kind of a 1-2-3. And in this case, they accepted the Trump question presented and just kind of pulling that up. I mean, it's basically, it says this, the question presented is, did the Colorado Supreme Court err in ordering President Trump excluded from the 2024 presidential primary ballot? ?
Yes.
I mean, so all those issues we talked about, plus more, can be included there.
So what we're doing is we're structuring a brief. We just had a meeting with our team where we're going to cover the three main issues we did, which is the president's not an officer. John Roberts, in an opinion he wrote in 2010, said citizens don't elect officers. They elect presidents and vice presidents, senators and congressmen. They don't elect officers. So he's not an officer under the Constitution, thus it doesn't apply. We also say that the 14th Amendment, Section 3, is not self-executing because Section 5 of the 14th Amendment says Congress shall pass implementing legislation. And then we still have our First Amendment issue as it relates to Colorado GOP. What is interesting here is because they've accepted this broad question, we're going to take all of the cognizable arguments that could be made here, and we're going to address them in the opening sections of our brief so that the court really we're going to try to lay out I guess the way I've been describing it is a roadmap of multiple off-ramps to get a victory here.
That's right. In other words, we're going to give the Supreme Court the opportunity to know what our position is on all the multitude of issues that Jay just went over that were addressed in the 213-page opinion of the Colorado Supreme Court. Not just one or two, but all the issues, the 14th Amendment issue, the officer issue, the First Amendment associational rights issue, all the issues. We're going to put all those down so that the Supreme Court can have an opportunity to base its decision on any one of all the issues that are before it.
Let me just say that I just looked at Rumble and our number of people it's flying. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of you watching on Rumble right now. I want to encourage you to subscribe to Rumble, to follow us, and also to share it with your friends. Same thing on YouTube right now. A lot of people watching that, which is great. But Jordan, what has to happen now is, and we've had a meeting this morning, is we lay out, now that the case has been heard, and it's our case, and it's both the Colorado Republican State Central Committee, we'll be hearing from the chairman later in the broadcast, and also the Trump case, we will be each briefing it separately. The Trump team will brief it. The Colorado GOP will brief it. That's us. We both get two briefs, which will be the opening brief and the reply brief. And then the question will become, and this is the fascinating part, and we got to find out if we have to do a joint appendix too. Here's the joint appendix we did in the cert petition, and maybe we'll just refer back to this joint appendix, but I mean, there it is. And it's, my goodness, it's the size of a book. If you're watching, you could see the scope of this thing. It's because the question, as you said, is so broad, we want to give the court as many avenues as possible so that in deciding the case, they can look at, you know, two justices may be interested in this particular issue. Another one may be, interested in the 14th Amendment. Some may be interested in the First Amendment. So we're going to try to make it broad and appealing in that regard, and the Trump campaign will do theirs, and ultimately the decision that the court renders will affect both the Trump case and the Colorado GOP case. Remember, it's the GOPs that are being denied also their right to put on candidates that they deem appropriate.
Yeah, that went through their process as well and has a long-term interest here, not just this election cycle, but making sure, and we've heard, and we'll talk to our client in the next segment of the broadcast from the Colorado State Republican Party. He's the chairman there. And he said it. I remember talking to the main chairman when there was a discussion there. And they've said, listen, I mean, we could go to a caucus system too. I mean, that's not necessarily our preference. That's our priority. But we do have the ability to do that. So, again, causing a mess right before the election. But now, Dad, I think, again, this is going to be heard on February 8th. I don't think that they're going to do the usual wait for months on months on months and months on ends to get an opinion. They realize they wouldn't be moving at this speed
I
now.
I think we have an opinion by mid-February.
Yeah, so it's moving at rapid speed. It's not we're going to finish in a week.
Well, some of the parties asked for it to be done by the whole thing to right. be done by the 15th. We didn't do that. We said it should be expedited, and we said it should be done by Super Tuesday. Well, I don't like setting deadlines for the court, and I think the court came up with a deadline that I think makes sense for this. You want me to play the Adam Schiff bite? Yeah, listen to what Adam Schiff says about the Supreme Court here.
Well, I have to say, if you're skeptical about this court, there's good reason to be skeptical. They've shown they're not a conservative court. They're not a court that feels bound by precedent. They're a reactionary court. They're a partisan court. And here, one of the justices in particular, the one you mentioned, Justice Thomas, has a very personal, close family member, spouse, who had a role in trying to overturn the election.
So this is the nonsense that you're going to start hearing for the next 3 weeks. And I wanted to play that bite because I want you to be clear on something, okay? The attacks are coming, especially to the justices. And you got to be very careful. And I've cautioned the Trump team on this too. I'm not presumptuous enough to say that I believe the justices are going to rule this way, this way, and this way. Here's what I'm presumptuous enough to say. Go into this case assuming we're losing by 3 votes. That's a good way to view this case, Andy. Assume you're behind by 3. You figure you got a couple, but you're behind by 3. You need 3 more votes, so that means you got 2. That's a good way to look at it. There's 2 there for us. I got to get 3 more.
I think you're right, and I think you need to go in with that attitude. Don't go in with an attitude that you're going to sweep it, because that may not necessarily be the case. These justices, I think, are all going to look at this very carefully. As Jay said, each one is going to have his or her issues that they're going to be particularly interested in. That's why we're going to be briefing all the issues that were raised in the Colorado Supreme Court, not just some of the issues. And the justices are going to be looking at this very carefully. Some will determine maybe that they want to focus on constitutional issues, the 14th Amendment, the insurrection business. Some will say, well, we don't have to get to that. We can just talk about whether he was an officer of the United States or not.
The way we're structured, I'm not going to get into the whole insurrection argument because I think it's a red herring. I think the question is, and this is what the Constitution says, that someone that may be deemed disqualified to run is allowed to run because Congress, by 2/3 vote, can remove. They have a clause of the Constitution under, I think it's the 12th Amendment, that allows them to remove the disqualification. So this whole premise that Colorado was operating on was totally wrong.
Yeah, so we're going to get into more of those details too in this part of the brief, which we didn't in the initial brief. And these were, again, those were more candidate specific to, and President Trump attorneys raised that, others have raised that as well, as listen, this is someone, if you got elected, Congress would then have the decision to make of whether or not to take that vote and remove that disqualification if you truly believed that the insurrection was at play here. Of course, in this case, we don't, in any of the cases facing President Trump, there's been no judicial finding of guilt that he committed insurrection. Nor has anyone filed a lawsuit, including Jack Smith, adding insurrection to the count.
Not only has there been no insurrection charge or finding, the only count of insurrection was in the second impeachment, and the president was acquitted. So that, I think that argument is going to fall to the side. Here, let me tell you what I want to do. I want to first thank our ACLJ members, especially our ACLJ champions, and hear why. We've now got the biggest election case in U.S. history. And we got clarified this morning that we are a full participating party to this case. We thought so Friday, got clarified this morning. That means we've got to file an opening brief and a reply brief in this. So this case is monumental. We're representing the Colorado GOP in this case. Our first Supreme Court brief is due in just 10 days. Our team will be going to Washington probably 3 or 4 days before then to get it ready. They're working on it. We'll have a draft this week. Because of you, our ACLJ champions were able to fight this, and we also have, at the same time, Supreme Court has taken a case out of Idaho on the life issue. We just got off the phone call with our colleagues in Israel about a delegation to London and Madrid the week of the 22nd that we're working on right now. So 2024 is going to be a very big year with many challenges, and we need many more ACLJ champions to report for duty, as our members are saying, to keep us in these fights, and many more to come and to keep winning. We're going to ask you to please become an ACLJ champion today. We're at 18,900 and like 15 or so. We're up 70 shy from 19,000. I would love to end the next day or two at clearing 19,000. And then by the end of the month, I'd like to get as close to 20,000 as we can, because I want to stay on track that at the end of this year, we have 30,000 or close to it ACLJ champions. Here's what it means. You go to aclj.org/champions. We're right there on the homepage too. We'll respond to one of the emails. And any amount you donate that you donate monthly, you become an ACLJ champion. And that's what we're asking people to do this month.
Yeah, and folks, what we want you to do is pick an amount you're comfortable with. That's going to, again, that you can make each month. It's not going to hurt you. And then you know that that's going to the ACLJ. And that together gives us that ability to be able to pivot very quickly when these cases pop up. Go to aclj.org. Become a champion today with that recurring donation. All right, welcome back to Secio. We are taking your calls too. If you got questions about any of the procedures here or how this will come down and how it'll affect your state, listen, this is going to affect every state. Now, some of you live in states where you didn't have secretaries of states or courts trying to do this, but about half the states did, and it was starting to move through many states. You've got a brief coming from 27 states saying, agreeing that this is wrong, that this should not be happening. But it all started in Colorado, and it started with the first brief filed at the U.S. Supreme Court was filed on behalf of the Colorado State Party, and their chairman, Dave Williams, is joining us now, who has been fighting this fight with us since the very beginning. And Dave, we want to thank you for that. It is much because of the Colorado Republican Party that this case is up before the U.S. Supreme Court right now.
You bet. I'm just thankful that the ACLJ and the work of your team has been instrumental for us. And I encourage anyone watching this, please donate to the ACLJ and help them to continue this fight, because without them, this wouldn't be possible.
So, Dave, we found out this morning, we've got kind of a clarity on what the schedule is going to look like. So the way it works is this. Although the Trump cert petition was granted, we are deemed a party respondent, as the Colorado Republican State Party, which means we're a full party to the case. So we have to do the same. We have to do the same set of briefs, actually, that the Trump campaign does. We both have to file our first set of briefs on January 18th. That's the opening merits brief. Then the other side responds pretty quickly. And then on February 5th, we file our last brief, which is called the reply brief. And that will be the last written words on this case until then. They'll have the argument on the 8th, and I expect within a couple of weeks we'll get an opinion. But I think, Dave, it's very important for our audience to understand, because Colorado led the charge here, and then we ended up representing 15 or 18 GOPs, and this litigation started spreading like wildfire. But now the Supreme Court hearing it, I think it's going to tamper it down. But why you knew to jump into this thing immediately?
I could see the writing on the wall. This was a desperate attempt by left-wing organizations to engage in election interference at the expense of free and fair elections, our right to vote for the candidates we choose. This is, I've said it from the beginning, this is bigger than Donald Trump. This is about our ability to vote in free and fair elections. And if we can't maintain that, then we don't have a country. And that's why I was so happy to partner with you guys and intervene in this case early on, because I always thought this would go to the Supreme Court, and here we are now.
You know, it's interesting, Andy, what David said, and that is because his right as the chairman of the GOP, the Colorado GOP, and their members to nominate the candidate of their choice was really taken away by Colorado Supreme Court decision.
That's right. Those are First Amendment, what we call associational rights, the right of a political party or people to associate together and to have a political point of view, conservative, traditional as ours is, a conservative point of view. And what the Colorado Secretary of State did in the Supreme Court of Colorado affirmed was, you can't do that. We're not going to let you do that. We're not going to let you associate freely together to pick your own candidates to put on the ballot. And that's constitutional nonsense.
Dave, from a membership standpoint, what have you heard from your members?
They're thrilled. They're thrilled that we're able to continue this fight and that we're going all the way to the highest court in the land. And there's optimism. There's optimism that cooler heads will prevail and that the court will agree with the arguments that we're putting forward. Again, this is an attack on our very underpinnings of our country with with respect to voting for people that we want or nominating the candidates that we want. And we certainly don't want unelected judges appointed by the opposition party telling our organization who we should support and who we should nominate. So they're thrilled and they couldn't be happier that you guys are with us along the way.
Yeah, and Dave, too, I think because, and I'm sure the attention there from your members, it's got to excite people up because they realized that, again, though the courts in Colorado, you know, it was going to be difficult. We knew it was going to be difficult, even though we got some early victories there, that ultimately, because you were and they were willing to go and take that stand as the Colorado Republican Party, this case now is at the U.S. Supreme Court and will be decided not just for Colorado, but will be decided for all states, not just for 2024, but for going forward into the future, so that states like yours, you remember talking about potentially having to go to a caucus system. That also was happening. We were talking to the GOP chair in Maine. And again, that there won't be that kind of potential likely shakeup, and that the rules will be clear, and that there will not be this huge new ability for partisans on either side to start trying to tell, you know, Democrats or Republicans who their nominees should be.
Yeah, that's correct. I think what this case is going to do is, right now it's already doing, is bringing hope. It's bringing hope to folks that cooler heads will prevail. Right? They shouldn't be removing Donald Trump from the ballot, and they shouldn't be removing Joe Biden from the ballot. What we should be doing is allowing folks the ability to vote who they want to vote for, and parties to nominate who they want to vote for. And I think ultimately the Supreme Court is going to side with us, and they're going to allow us to continue forward with our primary so that no drastic changes need to be made.
So the people are clear, Dave. Donald Trump, pending this disposition of the case, is now on the ballot. That was because when we filed early, that secured his right to be on the ballot.
That's correct. However, the Secretary of State, who is certainly very biased against Donald Trump, has indicated that she may not count those votes without an affirmative ruling from the Supreme Court.
That's why we got to win.
We'll see.
Yes, but again, and Dave's right. So that's why winning is important here. But by filing as early as we did, that secured the slot. But it's like a slot with an asterisk. And that asterisk is, hey, I don't have to count these if the court comes out obviously the other way, or if the court hadn't ruled, or, you know, this is that's why this has to move so quickly with 15 other cases. Dave, we appreciate it. Thanks for partnering with us, and we're thrilled representing you. This is really good news. Even better news today, when we found out this morning, we get the full briefing schedule that we're allowed to do here. That's really great news. So, Dave, we appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on the broadcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank
folks, I'm going to tell you right now that this is historic. This is a major case, the biggest election case in U.S. history. We've got two briefs to do. They're going to be great, but they're going to take a lot of time. We've already had meetings on them this morning. We're representing Dave, the Colorado GOP. We represent about 15, how many, Jordan, 17 GOPs?
It was about 16, 17 on one of the
other cases.
Yeah, briefs that was going to Michigan. Now some of them are starting to move off to file their own amicus. Yeah. Brief, so we're going to see.
We're out of the. Yeah, we can't represent them anymore while we're representing the party at the case, and we are representing a party at the case. So we're asking our ACLJ champions, first of all, thank you to those of you that are supporting the work of the ACLJ already. Yeah. But if you can be an ACLJ champion for life, liberty, and freedom, let me tell you, let me focus on liberty and freedom for this one. This is a liberty and freedom fight. Your right to vote for the candidate of your choice. And it's way beyond Donald Trump. I just put that on the side. It's your candidate of your choice. That the Colorado Secretary of State and the Maine Secretary of State thought they could just take your candidate of the choice and move it away. That's not what the law says. So we're filing these briefs. We're working on it. And we're working on our schedules now to get this done. We want to ask you to support the ACLJ monthly through this multi-month fight we're in. ACLJ.org/champions. You become a champion for life, a champion for liberty, and a champion for freedom. 2024 is going to be a big year with many challenges. We already are looking at deploying another ACLJ, ECLJ team to London the week of the 22nd. That's going on too right now in the middle of these briefs. So if you can give monthly to the ACLJ, just go over to ACLJ.org/champions. I want to get that up to 19,000 and then 20,000 by the end of this month. ACLJ.org.
Yeah, again, ACLJ.org. We want you to become one of those ACLJ champions. Again, if it's $20, if it's $50 that you're comfortable with making each month automatically, you become an ACLJ champion. And that is huge for this kind of work. ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. So as you saw in the news alerts over the weekend, the Supreme Court, not surprisingly, by the way, has decided to take up the case involving the 14th Amendment and President Trump. We filed our first, actually, to the Supreme Court in the Colorado case. That was the case that actually made its way through all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The other situation in Maine was just getting started, and other courts were being dismissed at lower levels. But what you're now going to see is we have the briefing scheduled, Dad. We actually will be able to tell people, and so they will start getting to publicly see the arguments being made. Now, some of these will be the same that they've already seen.
Some.
But now you'll have the opposition, those who want to use this to bar Donald Trump, having to respond to the Trump brief, to our brief on behalf of the Colorado State Party, and then we will be, when they respond, we will be able to reply.
So here how is it work. So this is January 8th. On January 18th, we have to have filed, lodged with the court, the printed version of our brief. I'm holding in my hands what we filed at the cert petition stage. As you can see, it's bound about 2 inches thick. We will be filing our brief on the 18th of January. We're working on that brief now. We'll be deploying a team. It's in our Washington office as the primary office responsible, but team lawyers from other offices, including this office, will all be going up there to get this thing done. That's on the 18th. The other side then comes back and they file their brief at the end of the month. I think it's on the 30th or 31st. So about 2 weeks later, a little less than 2 weeks, actually. Then we go back to D.C. because on February 5th, our reply brief is due. And that's our reply to whatever is filed by Crew, the lawyers representing the electors that have filed the lawsuit. But we also will file, respond to whatever the Secretary of State files. So there you have it. That is all taking place now. Let's go ahead and take Denise's call from Arizona on line one. Denise, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air. If you want to talk to us, it's 1-800-684-3110. Dennis, I'm sorry, 1-800-684-3110. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Jay. I have a two-part question. Would these lawsuits be a violation of their oath of office to uphold the Constitution? And secondly, would it be the basis for a recall petition against the Secretary of State?
Yeah. So they have argued that they would, that this would be a violation of their office if they didn't remove the candidate. That is not true, because under the Constitution, they don't have that authority. You could even put a disqualified candidate on a ballot, because that's the difference of running for an office and the being seated. That's up to Congress. And Congress has the ability to remove a disqualification if, in fact, there is one. We don't think there is one here, obviously. But that will be one of many arguments that are made.
Yeah.
So the Secretary of State's are way off on this.
Yeah, and remember, just to show you kind of two different, very similar Secretaries of State. In Colorado, the Secretary of State was technically sued by the lawsuit was brought against them by these individuals who were backed by the liberal organization Crew. And they said, basically, I will follow along with whatever the courts decide in Colorado. And then when the Supreme Court in Colorado said take Trump off the ballot, but big asterisks, if the Supreme Court stays this, then he will be put on the ballot. So he will be put on the ballot in Colorado as of now. Remember, the Secretary of State there was the one being sued to be told to do this. In Maine, they just had a different judicial process where you could go to the Secretary of State first, and they would have like this non-legal adjudication where she would hear arguments, then get to make a decision, and then you could appeal that decision. There's only two stages of courts there. So a little bit different. Neither one of them had ever claimed, I do want to make it clear, that they're the final say.
No, and it's clear now the Supreme Court's decision will affect all the states. So all of the state litigation right now should come to a halt.
Yeah.
Because the Supreme Court's disposition of this is going to be very, very quick. But that's why we need you supporting the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org. We want you to become an ACLJ champion.
Yeah, and an ACLJ champion is, as you pick an amount, and it's great that this January, the first month of the year, you pick an amount that is you're comfortable with donating each month. It'll happen automatically so that we know, we have an idea of how much is coming in through our champions amount. It gets us ready for these wild times. Secchio, there are other topics obviously to discuss as well. As the Supreme Court, you know, as the filings get closer, we'll talk more about that. And I think it again is now we kind of have the
we know the time frame. We've got to file our brief for the GOP for the party on the 18th of January. They have to file on the 31st. We have to file again on the 5th. So we know the dates now. It's going to move really very. That sounds like, oh, you got 3 weeks. Trust me, the Supreme Court brief, that's like 3 minutes. But we've got our team's working on it. In great shape. We've got Rick Grenell joining us. Rick, you know, you're a cabinet member, and another cabinet member of the Biden administration is the Secretary of Defense, who evidently had I'm sympathetic to somebody that's had a heart procedure, was in the hospital for 5 days, did not notify the President of the United States or his staff as to the situation. How unusual and how dangerous is that for our country?
Well, it's extremely dangerous. I'm concerned that Jake Sullivan, who's the National Security Advisor, didn't find it odd that he wasn't seen or speaking with the Secretary of Defense for 5 days while two wars were raging on and while Americans are being held hostage. I don't understand how the National Security Advisor doesn't speak to the Secretary of Defense for 5 days. That is so unacceptable. And let me just add one other thing, Jay. There are a whole bunch of Pentagon reporters who clearly missed this. They don't have enough sources. They don't have the right sources. I'm sorry, but there are plenty of people who knew that the Secretary of Defense was in the hospital. His detail knew. The secretaries who were making the schedule knew. His assistant knew. The chief of staff knew. All of these people should be held to account. Why did they lie to the American people during wartime? You know who did know that the Secretary of Defense was in the hospital? China, guaranteed.
Mm. You know, I mean, Rick, when I read this, I mean, I think people get upset because they find out that, again, maybe laws weren't broken. We're looking into that now. I mean, it might have been by the deputy taking over, but clearly, it doesn't appear that the White House even knew about this. I mean, so when you're talking about active conflicts where decisions are having to be made, we've got it in, of course, Ukraine with Russia and U.S. Weaponry and U.S. armaments going there all of the time. We've got, of course, what's going on in the Middle East and in Israel with Hamas, but also what's happening in the Red Sea. And as you said, the issue with China is that we're at a point now where the Secretary of Defense's team thought it would be a good idea to keep this from the Commander-in-Chief.
But let's also be very clear about one thing. America is less safe under Joe Biden. We've seen it with the Houthis. We've seen it with two wars. We've seen it with the open border. And now this is a very serious situation. I still go back to this. We say this a lot. But the media in D.C. are allowing things to get worse because there's no pushback. Take, for instance, this morning in Politico. White House officials and Pentagon officials are spinning to Politico. And Politico took it, hook, line, and sinker, that the Secretary of Defense is a private man with a stiff upper lip, and he just wanted to suck it up and go into the hospital, and all is fine because he's a strong guy that didn't want to bother people. That's his personality. He just didn't want to bother people. Well, that would be fine if Lloyd Austin was a private citizen, but he's the Secretary of Defense in charge of protecting us. That is not fine. It is unacceptable. And for Politico to give aid and comfort to this situation just goes to show the regime media and how they won't push back, and therefore things will get worse because there are no consequences for Jake Sullivan or Lloyd Austin.
Yeah, I mean, there people are calling for consequences, but you, like as you said, Rick, it doesn't seem like in this administration we see times when there should be consequences, and Joe Biden fails to act. I mean, so you see Mayorkas failure at the border, and it's Congress forced to act. And I think, you know, in rightfully so, as they've opened up an impeachment inquiry, because we've seen the numbers have doubled. We've seen the numbers of deaths from fentanyl double. We've seen the number of illegal immigrants double. We've heard from Democrat mayors and governors about how tough this is getting on that issue. So if they're unwilling to move Mayorkas, it seems like they're going to be totally unwilling, unless there's some massive pressure from Democrats in the U.S. Senate on the national security side. They're going to be unwilling to punish anyone like Lloyd Austin with, like, stepping down.
Well, Democrats have been largely silent on this. The media has been largely silent. I mean, the New York Times reporter, Helene Cooper, she couldn't have been more dismissive of, oh, this is no big deal. She feigned outrage for about 6 hours. But you know, I don't believe that she didn't know. I actually think reporters at the Pentagon covered for him, that they knew and they didn't want to make it a scandal, because this is the regime media. This is consequences for Republicans, never for Democrats.
So, you know, yeah, go ahead, I had something, Rick. So here's my concern with all of this. The lack of transparency. Could you imagine if this happened under your administration and the Secretary of Defense was, you know, absent and nobody knew about it? I mean, the media would be going ballistic. But you said something that's very important. There's one group of people that knew, and that was the Chinese government, because they tend to know everything. And that shows the instability of this administration to formalize lines of communication when you do. Listen, people get sick. And I'm sympathetic to the Secretary of Defense, the, you know, situation. He looks like he had to get a heart stent. I'm familiar with all of that. I mean, those are serious things, and I'm glad he's well and recovered. But my goodness, our enemies knew it. You know that.
And we have a process when you're sick. You hand it over. But, you know, the deputy didn't, she didn't even know that Austin was sick. She was in Puerto Rico on vacation, was told, hey, you might want to stay near your phone because we might need you. That was the extent of what she was told. But this is really a scary moment. And again, there are no consequences. Jake Sullivan, why isn't anyone at the White House asking him, do you routinely go 5 days without speaking to the Secretary of Defense? Remember, this happened with Pete Buttigieg, too. He was gone. He was on leave. And nobody really knew, and he didn't tell anybody. He didn't hand over a transparent document to say, you know, this is what's happening. He tried to hide it and got caught later. This is a pattern with this administration, and it's a pattern with the regime media that covers them.
But Rick, here's the thing that is so troubling to me. Nobody, if the press office for the Secretary of Defense would have said, Secretary Austin is having a heart procedure to correct a blood flow in his heart, and we'll have a series of heart stents and a catheterization. You know what everybody would have been doing? Praying for a success. And they would have handed it over to the assistant secretary, and nothing would have happened. Instead, they create the hullabaloo.
Yeah, we would have absolutely been praying for our Secretary of Defense during this wartime. He would have received massive amounts of prayers from Americans. But the fact is now, today, with Politico and others, they're scrambling to just dismiss the story. They don't think they did anything wrong, Jay.
The problem. Well, Rick, we appreciate your insight on this, as always. Thanks for being part of the team here at the ACLJ. Folks, you're getting it from Rick was a cabinet member. He was director of national intelligence, ambassador to Germany. This is the caliber of people we have associated with us. We've got a major Supreme Court case. Let me tell you what my morning was like, just for a moment. At 9 o'clock, I was on a Zoom call, secured Zoom call with our colleagues in Israel, because they're trying to get another family group to go to London to meet with the prime minister and others in leadership, as well as some church leaders in London, which is very important because the church in England has not been so supportive of Israel, and they need to hear from these families. So we were working on that from 9 to 9:30 Central Time, where we were. At 9:40, we got on the phone. I got on a phone call with our Supreme Court team to get that ready. All of this is happening simultaneously. We are booked the entire month of January through February 5th already. Jammed, slammed. And that's where you come in.
Yeah, it is. And this is where you can make such a difference by becoming an ACLJ champion. With the Supreme Court agreeing to hear the biggest election case in U.S. history, and we are representing the Colorado GOP in this case, we've got to file twice. Initially at the beginning of this case at the U.S. Supreme Court, the initial brief. We also then will file the reply to the brief that will be filed by the organization crew and the people that they represent who want Trump off the ballot. So we'll be filing two briefs within a matter of the first brief's due in 10 days? About 10 days?
18th.
Yeah.
10 days.
Yeah, 10
really
days.
Nine, because you got to get it to the printer the day before.
So 9 days for a merits brief that will cover more than just the topics we covered in our initial brief representing the Colorado Republican Party. And, of course, we're ready to do that. Team's already been working on it. And then we'll have until February 5th to reply to their briefs. So we'll have, again, that chance to reply because we are a party in this case. This is not amicus. This is being a party to the case, Dad. And it's why these ACLJ champions, from that day we spoke with Dave at the Colorado Republican Party, have been so important to this case.
And we knew this was the one. I mean, we knew this was the case that was going to the Supreme Court. But you, our ACLJ champions, have reported for duty, and we want to encourage you to do that.
We didn't have to worry about resources.
We did not have to worry about resources
and
getting this done.
We had to bring in new resources to get it done.
And we did have to bring in people like Jane Raskin and others to get it done. And now we've got the situation going on for the Israelis where we've got to get an event and situation in London. ACLJ.org/champions. Become a champion for life, liberty, and freedom. ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
I think I want to go through this timeline one more time because I want to make sure people understand how quick our team at the ACLJ, with everything else going on that we're about to talk about too, and the issues we're talking about with Rick, and I know ACLJ Action's taking action today on Mayorkas. So, I mean, you know, we have a team, obviously. We're not just, you know, one-tracked here, but on our Supreme Court team that's been on this 14th Amendment case since Friday evening, trying to figure out, because it's such a different kind of setup and the wording that was used was different. We just really figured out over the weekend exactly our timeline. I want you to just underscore to people how quick the timeline moves before oral argument here.
Well, there's only a month between now and oral argument. It's about a month exactly between now and oral argument. But the briefing, which is where the bulk of this is, folks, you win or lose these cases on the briefing. Our first brief is due the 18th, which means we have to have it to the printer on the 17th. So that is less than 10 days from now. So we are already working on it. We'll probably get a draft this weekend. We'll probably have a team dispatched to D.C. to get it finished up. Then the respondents, the other side, will have till the 31st. So they get about a little less than 2 weeks. Then we have to turn around a brief on the 5th, which really means we need to get it to the printer on the 4th in order to get it in on time. So it's a very condensed schedule, and then the arguments on the 8th, I expect we get a decision, you know, the middle towards the end of, I think before the Super Tuesday, I think we have a decision in the case. So that's what's going on there. We also had, before that call, Cece and I were on a secured call a Zoom call with our colleagues in Israel. And we're also getting ready to file a brief that is addressing the International Court, the International Court of Justice. Let's talk about that one first, then I'll talk about the delegation to London. The IJC, because South Africa filed a charge against Israel claiming genocide, immediately impaneled the IJC, the International Court of Justice. And Israel has dispatched Justice Barak to be the Israel judicial representative. And then a colleague that we worked with previously, a British barrister, Malcolm Shaw, to make the arguments, which, by the way, are the 11th. So that's happening right away. We are drafting a brief right now. Now, technically, you're not allowed to file the brief with the court, but you know what you can do? You file it with every country that's got a judge up there, and you file it with the judges, and you file it with the other officials and notify all the countries involved in what's happening here. Cece?
Yeah, so we are working on that brief at the ICJ right now. In response to what you said, South Africa has filed basically an application against Israel for genocide, which on its face fails. I mean, clearly this is an anti-Semitic, anti-Israel filing once again at an international tribunal, and well, South Africa is leading the cause to falsely accuse
them. They are very pro-Hamas, South Africa, and, you know, and Israel didn't have to respond, but Israel felt compelled to respond, Jordan, because of what happened on that day of October 7th.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, this is, again, this was not Israel deciding, okay, this is a moment we think Hamas is weak. We're going to go launch a war because we think this is the right move. In fact, if you look back over the last few years, Israel was hoping that things were settling down
Yes.
inside the Gaza Strip, that people were, even Hamas, was concerned more about infrastructure, building, finances, and economics. And now we know that was all just a ruse.
To lull the Israelis into a false sense of security.
Right. I mean, so they had the exact opposite mindset of building up to go into a massive war.
So let's talk about the IJC. So what are we doing?
So again, we cannot file officially in the case, but we are preparing a brief, absolutely.
That would be published everywhere.
Yes. Showing why this application for genocide fails and the ICJ cannot even address it. And so our brief will be sending it out again, like to all of the interested countries, the judges for those, you know, that are representing those countries. They will, every party that is indicated or implicated in this brief will get a copy.
Yeah. Now, at the same time, we were on a call this morning with our colleagues in London, and these are the colleagues that represent the voice for the, it's called the Voice of Freedom Coalition, and it's the group that represents the families. We had the delegation in the United States that we all hosted back in mid-November. Then our colleagues in Europe, our European Center for Law and Justice, in December hosted a group, and that group was in France and Brussels, and now it looks like London is about to happen.
Yeah, so now we'll do another delegation in UK and Spain. Again, targeting leaders, explaining the situation with the hostages, having hostage families there for them to speak with.
Including, by the way, church leaders. So one of the things I suggested, actually, was that because the church has been so silent in Europe,
yes,
about this atrocity that took place against the Jews, when never again happened. Okay? Never again happened. And there still were silence. I said there needs to be, in this structure of events, where we invite with other leaders an event focusing in on the churches and the Christian leadership in the country. That this is not a moral equivalency situation. And the coalition that we're part of said we think that's a great idea. And we're working with people that we've worked with for decades over in England. And then they're going to also go possibly to Madrid for public relations and media. But the England one is really going to be focused on governmental. Folks, all of this is happening simultaneously with a huge Supreme Court brief. So if you looked at our schedule of the lawyers working on this, understand this. On the 18th, we have to have our brief in at the Supreme Court of the United States. On the 20th or so, 21st, a delegation will be going to the UK. And that is for meetings starting on the 22nd. You get in a day or two before. That delegation will go through probably the 26th to 27th, maybe even the 28th. There will then be a brief due to the Supreme Court on February 5th in the election case. And then arguments on the 8th, and we get a decision. So we're booked. And this is where you come in. And Jordan, it is critical for our ACLJ members. First of all, if you can donate, if you can only donate one time, that's great too, ACLJ.org. But if you can become an ACLJ champion, that will make a huge difference for us.
You know, and some people, you're going to be more comfortable making a larger donation one time or a couple times a year. That's great. But if you're somebody who says you like to budget monthly and say, you know what, this is, you know, I donate this much to my church, I can donate this much to the ACLJ. This is what we've created, ACLJ champions. And we say that it's not just about a recurring donor. This is really acknowledging that these recurring donors are making that plan so that they know that the ACLJ is enabled to plan, to know that if something new arises, which Lord knows it does all the time for us in the ACLJ, when times feel at all like they're slow, it doesn't last very long. And I'll tell you, from Israel to these Trump cases, to the 14th Amendment, all the way to U.S. Supreme Court, having recurring donors, now ACLJ champions ready to go, is so important. So whether you're somebody who says, you know, I like to give once or twice a year, bigger amounts, that's me, that's very important to the ACLJ. And if you're someone, again, who likes to, again, budget it out over the year and give it each month an amount that's really comfortable, it's not going to hurt you at all economically, that, again, is our ACLJ Champions Program. And then we can count on knowing that that amount will be there so that if something like this case pops up.
Or the situation in Europe.
Yeah, or the situation in Europe. And we need to shift a few $1,000s here, $10,000 here. That the resources will be there and it won't take away from anything else the ACLJ. I keep trying to say that. This is not taking away from anything else the ACLJ is doing on all we're doing in Washington, D.C. and around the world.
So So here's what we want you to do. Become an ACLJ champion for life, liberty, and freedom. Go to ACLJ.org/champion and report for duty if you're able. ACLJ.org/champions. A lot more information coming out in the days ahead. You're going to want to stay tuned. Make sure you're following us on all our social media. We'll talk to you tomorrow.